Hello and welcome to this week's Front Page, where we'll be discussing the biggest stories from last week, including Cheltenham changes, how much will the price of Guinness cost at next year's festival, we'll reflect on some of the big juvenile contests at the weekend, and of course, look ahead once more to the Arc and an interesting jockey booking on one of the British contenders. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio by James Stevens and Matt Rennie. Guys, how are we?
Good, very good, yep.
Very, very good.
Fabulous piece in today's paper, James, on the Kazakhstan racing scene. Be sure to go out and get a copy of that. What can you tell us about racing in Kazakhstan?
Well, it's a place which I didn't know much about before the start of the month. It crossed over with Wales's international World Cup qualifying, somehow in Europe, God knows why. But an interesting place where racing and horses are a big part of the culture, but horse racing less so. The St. Ledger itself was a pretty poor race, and Kazakhstan racing is emerging. But there's a new race course being built. It's a thriving place, and perhaps in years to come, it's going to be bigger and more better and more frequently talked about on the front page, perhaps.
We'll see. Bigger, better. That was sort of the motto with Cheltenham. Making changes to improve the experience for customers amid sort of slumping attendances last year. You've been all over this story, James. Tell us about some of those key headlines.
Yeah, you know it's jump season time when the big coats are on and we're talking about the price of a pint of Guinness at Cheltenham. But it's going to be lower this year, this season. The price of a pint is lowered by 30p, and this was like the headline act in a series of changes made by Guy Lavender last week. We also know there's going to be a new capacity cap of 66,000 from 68,500. We've got freedom of where drinks could be taken across the racecourse. There was previously restrictions on where alcohol could be taken. And this was quite important at Cheltenham last year, a trial last year, because it meant alcohol could be taken again in the betting ring, which helped drive a lot more interest. So that was quite key. We've got extended ticket price windows, so you can access cheaper ticket prices for longer. Some upgrades to facilities and perhaps of very much interest to a lot of our viewers, increased efforts to bring down the accommodation cost during festival week, although there's only little Cheltenham can do. On the whole, you mentioned being across this story, I was impressed by the set of changes made by Guy Lavender. He started in January. He said he wanted a few months to bed in before implementing his own changes. He said he wants customer focus to be the big thing, and this very much feels like his stamp on it. And as we know, Cheltenham crowds have sunk by a fifth at the festival since 2022. I hope these changes work for Cheltenham.
No, absolutely. We all know how important Cheltenham is, not only to the jockey club's finances and planning for the year, but racing full stop. Matt, how heartened were you by these changes? Were there any that stood out to you as being particularly important?
Yeah, there was. Obviously, it's sort of 50-50, 60-40 when analysing them. The one I was really pleased with was the drinks restrictions being lifted, because if you're essentially beforehand, if you're being told to restrict areas where you want to drink, you feel like you're being kettled in somewhere, and it's quite uncomfortable, really. And if you're at the races, you do want to watch the races while you're probably having a pint of Guinness or whatever non-alcoholic drink you want. And also the fact that it sort of reinvigorated the betting ring as well was a real, real positive, because that's one of the staples of the racing experience, especially at the festival where we're expecting these big bets, the big market movers and whatnot. So I was really, really pleased with that. I do think the big issue is, Willie Mullins touched on it as well, when he touched on it specifically for Irish fans coming over, was accommodation. I mean, you can put it into all brackets, really, if people are coming from Scotland, the north of England, southeast of England as well. The accommodation is still going to be the real, real issue. And I feel slightly sorry for Cheltenham on that front, because they're going to be hamstrung, because they can't control what prices the hotel set, because they're independent companies.
Yeah, is that not an issue that faces all major events?
It does, but probably more so in Cheltenham, because Cheltenham's a town rather than Wembley, Twickenham. They've got London. People say loads of London, there's loads of hotel options. Cheltenham's obviously, in respect to that, a small market town. I know it's got Birmingham and Bristol nearby.
Cheltenham's 115,000, I think, the population. There's 200 and something thousand that go racing, more than the population in 4 days. So that,
yeah, there's a unique challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, there is.
But I suppose that Cheltenham can still have those conversations with hoteliers and say,
yeah,
if you take, and I sense that from those conversations with Guy Lavender that a lot of hotels have been receptive, that we don't want to charge too much because ultimately it becomes a sort of foregone conclusion. But I sense a few of the larger chains are still trying to make a bit more than perhaps is sensible out of this week.
Well, he called on, that was the word he used, called on hotels to be sensible. And that's the key word, because they have been taking advantage of the fact there's this big festival here, there's a lot of demand. But this won't be the first time the hotels in Cheltenham be told that, because, you know, I socialise on the festival evenings. Cheltenham Town was very, very quiet on race week, like surprisingly quiet. On the Wednesday, I was stunned, because you've got this weird world where a lot of people aren't staying in Cheltenham, and the crowd was down significantly. I think that was the lowest day at Cheltenham for a long, long time. And the locals don't go out. So the town centre was quieter on a Wednesday night than it would be in usual. And so people who have bars and other businesses and restaurants and cafes and things like that, if people are not staying in Cheltenham and feeding into the local economy, then they're going to be pretty annoyed. So the hotels won't just be getting it from the race course. It's a whole big central model, so it will affect everyone. And Matt touches on a really good point about where you can take your drinks, because I think this is where Cheltenham do deserve a bit of credit, because I saw all the stuff on social media, oh, it's only 30p for this change, what difference does it make? But actually, that's a really good example of what small thing really makes a difference to the day. And Guy touched on it, where a lot of people were in the Guinness Village, 10 minutes to go before races, oh, I've got half a pint, do I want to down that? I've paid quite a bit of money for it, maybe less so. And also, there's lots of queues, so you can't plan and go, okay, I'm going to have a buy a drink there, then I'm going to drink it, and then I'm going to watch the race. When there's queues, it's hard to know. So actually, just listening to the details of the customers makes a big difference.
And Matt, will it be enough? Because my sense is very much that if the idea now and the sort of prevailing view is that Cheltenham is too expensive, even when you make tweaks, even if that's not the case, it almost takes on a life of its own, and it becomes sort of assumed knowledge now that, well, Cheltenham's too expensive. Is this enough to kind of shift it back in that right direction as a statement of intent that we are listening and we do want to offer value?
It's a good question. I don't really know. I'm more of a skeptic, so I probably would say not at this stage, and maybe more needs to be done. But they put in the framework to start that process. I think that they've done probably as much as they could do for now, and then we have to see how the 2026 festival goes on with it as well. And Guy Lavender has got a very, very good CV in terms of bringing these changes. You know, when he was working at Somerset in the chief executive role there, he turned them into one of the best run county cricket teams in Britain, and they still are, probably from his legacy as well as the MCC. It's just the way sport's gone as a whole at the moment is fans have been for a while, you know, extorted for prices, absurd prices from any sporting events we see, and someone has to be brave enough to start making those changes, and fair play for Cheltenham for giving it a go. I'm sceptical at this point. I think maybe we need a little bit more still, but some of the things just aren't in Cheltenham's control either. For example, train transport, you know, we know the price of train tickets are through the roof at the minute and inadequate for the trains we actually get, and the space and whatnot on it, and the regularity of it as well. But again, just touching back on it, one of the reasons I stopped going to Cheltenham and chose to go to Punchtown instead was because you could go and, you know, drink while you're placing a bet and take it around everywhere, and it was a far, far more enjoyable experience. So if Cheltenham can translate that, they might bring back a few more people on that front.
I think the other topic which nothing was changed on was the race programme, because for all we talk about the small changes Cheltenham make, if a horse goes and appears as the next Quarto Star, suddenly the crowds are going to come back very quickly. And, you know, we've got some really big names. I mean, Galopin de Champ is a huge name. Constitution Hill is just such a fascinating product. We're not product. Well, he isn't a product, in a marketing tool, I guess.
Yeah, he's a PR product.
He certainly is.
He's a fabulous racehorse.
And the story is even more interesting from a viewer perspective. You know, what's going to happen in the 2026 Champion Hurdle? But the programme itself always needs to be looked at and investigated. But at the same time, I can understand why Cheltenham haven't gone, right, these are the problems we had in 2025, let's make quick changes. Because the jumps programme takes a lot of time to evolve, because horses who are bumper horses now will be novice chasers in 3 or 4 years, and we don't quite know what the field size is going to look like. But I thought the changes they made last year were superb. Fascinated to see how that changes over time.
I think just as key as well is let's get these customer changes right first for the off-track experience, because your punters and your race goers, they'll always attract the best horses and the best jockeys and the best trainers to Cheltenham. We want to be attracting as many healthy numbers of customers as possible, and they are the ones that deserve the best experience possible.
So this isn't, to your mind, window dressing. This is going to move the needle back and stop people going to watch it in Benidorm.
Well, that's the word Richard used, window dressing, and it's
Richard Forrestal
in a really good column, and I agreed with bits of it. I didn't agree with other bits. It was that sort of column, thought provoking as they should be. I wouldn't describe it as window dressing. I think it was a costly change by Cheltenham to change the narrative. So, bit of number crunching for you. According to the Jockey Club, 265,000 pints of Guinness are consumed at the Cheltenham
Festival. That's impressive.
It is impressive, and it's not all my own work. That's about £80,000 if you take 30p of all of those. So that's an £80,000 price Cheltenham are paying to essentially say, customers, we're listening to you, we're trying to change things to make it better for you. If we're talking about big Cheltenham gambles, potentially we've had the best one already.
No, absolutely. A big Cheltenham gamble then with the changes that have been made. Hopefully those improve the customer experience and, most importantly, get a few more people back through the doors. It looked to be a healthy crowd at Newmarket on Saturday, where we had the Cambridgeshire and a very impressive winner in Boiling Point. Matt, it's Clifford Lee, it's Carl Burke, it's the Cambridgeshire, it's a group horse and a handicap. We should have all seen it. You did.
Yeah, and it was top weight as well. It's exactly the same as Liberty Lane last year. Look, I spoke to Carl on Thursday about Boiling Point, and you know, Carl's usually very effusive about his horses, but when you say one's a group horse in a handicap, you have to take note. And I thought Clifford got it absolutely spot on from the front as well. I sort of picked him, but I thought early on, I thought, hang on, he's going a bit too quick here for my liking. But he got it completely spot on, even if it was a photo finish, and he's sort of agonising over the result. Look, I said a few weeks ago, Carl's really kicked on again this season. He's kicking on again and again and again. Sometimes maybe his two-year-olds wouldn't go on as far as they would do, or his three-year-olds, but they really have now. Obviously, Venetian Sun, we've seen win the pre-money, and a live 1,000 guineas contender for next year. It was a strong Cambridgeshire meeting for him. A brief touch on Zeus Olympios, looks like he could be the next star mile, older miler for next season. So you're already looking to 2026, and Burke's got one of, if not the most powerful teams in Britain. It's not fair to say that now.
I tried to tee you up about your winning punt treble and celebrations when Boiling Point won. Tell the viewers and listeners.
Yeah. So Bo Echo, True Love, and Boiling Point. Boiling Point was the big one for the 140-1 punt acca treble to land. I did have to go apologise to my neighbours for nearly shouting down the whole row of terraced houses, and I gave them a.
Did you reach
present.
Boiling Point at that point?
I did. And
why
then,
didn't I think of that?
And then when it got to the time of the photo finish, I saw Indolo flying at the end. I thought, oh God, here we go again. I think I let out a massive no, and they might have thought I'd fallen down the stairs or something. So I might have put their hearts in their mouths as well as mine for a little bit, but we got there in the end, and it's once in a blue moon.
We're all about celebrating success at the Racing Post, and James, he never had any reason to doubt, did he? Clifford Lee off the front end, setting the fractions. There's no one better at the moment.
I was worried you were going to ask me about my success, because I vaguely remember what cheering home a winner was like. I think Matt touches on what Carl Burke has achieved in a very smallish space of time, in that every Saturday you look through the race cards, the big races, there's a Burke fancied runner in there. And he's established not just a really good, powerful string, but also a lot of different owners who want to be involved in that yard. Clifford Lee is really marking himself out as one of the best from the front. It's not an easy thing to do. It can be difficult, especially at tracks you don't know particularly well, and Clifford's not a man you'd associate with Newmarket compared to all the Newmarket-based jockeys, but still he rides that Roly Mile as good as anyone, you'd have to say, from the front. And I think we should touch as well on Sheikh Mohammed Obeid. What a weekend for him. Bo Echo looked seriously good in the Royal Lodge.
Yeah, well, there's a seamless segue. Was he the two-year-old for you to take out of that meeting at Newmarket?
From Newmarket, definitely. Thought he was very impressive, real classic contender. I thought Hawk Mountain was particularly good in Ireland at the Curragh and the Beresfords, and we know what Aidan O'Brien is like. He doesn't just go to the gym at 4:30 in the morning.
That
as
was
he says.
Staggering, didn't it? Sunday's big read with David Jennings.
He is a man of routine, and that's what that article on Sunday, well worth a read, shows. And as a man of routine, he's the same replacing his horses. Good horses running the Berefords, Hawk Mountains, another.
Puts us all to shame. I wasn't in the gym at 4:30 this morning. Bo Echo, then, the idea is not to run in a trial. I suppose he's already won over a mile. He's already won at the course. Is he your idea of the Guineas winner at this ridiculously early stage?
It's so hard to tell because the last, well, this time last year, Ruling Court had just been finished third in an Acom Stakes. None of us would have had him as the Guineas winner, even when he went out to Dubai and won. And obviously, the year before that, Notable Speech was still in the yard getting ready to make his debut in January. So maybe a bit too early. If there was one that would stand out for me as a possible main threat to Bo Echo, it would be Distant Storm that won the Tattersall Stakes on the Thursday. He absolutely bolted up, to be fair. And it all went completely wrong in the Acom for him because they needed a strong pace and he didn't get it. It just didn't settle at all. So you could probably mark him up finishing third then. But you are likely to get quite a strong gallop in the Guineas, which would suit him down to a T. So I'd maybe at this stage rather be with him. Bo Echo, lovely horse, but it was touched on Saturday. The size of him, he looks like he's a ready-made two-year-old, whereas a few of them might have the more scope to improve next year. So I think Bo Echo was probably the standout juvenile performance of the week in terms of, you know, winning a Group 2 and whatnot, and probably the Cheveley Park and Middle Park did feel slightly under par runnings this year. That I don't think will produce any classic runners, let alone winners. So it makes the winter cockles warm, doesn't it? Looking forward to the Guineas already next year.
Well, exactly. There's a lot of jumping to take place between. I see James glaring at me.
I won't be thinking about the Guineas.
There's a lot of jumping to take place before then.
True love, Mike.
Well, I was made to look very stupid, not for the first time in my life, you'll be shocked to hear. So after that race, I was thinking, she's absolutely enormous. Mm. She's hit the line like a train. Got to be a Guineas horse, surely. Obviously, it was only 6 furlongs, but I thought a mile is going to be absolutely perfect. Big price, and I thought something, she should be an awful lot shorter than that. And then Aidan O'Brien comes out and goes, she's all speed, she's a sprinter. I'm still not entirely sure she wouldn't deserve to run in a Guineas, but what's your first impression?
My first impression is I'd be more on your side because of what you've just said. And for all I understand, she is got a lot of speed. Horses from this point in the year to April, two-year-olds, their bodies are changing all the time. They can just turn a certain way, and she might grow in a certain way over the winter that suggests she will get a bit further. So I wouldn't give up on her totally yet. She's a good horse, and I think of the two winners, she's the one I'd want to follow more as a three-year-old, because I still think she'll be just as good. Wise Approach will be a decent enough horse, but I just wonder whether he's going to be more of a two-year-old than a three-year-old, and that this perhaps is his best season, and he might not step forward as others might do. But I could be wrong, but True Love, I wouldn't give up yet.
Okay, that's good to hear. I'm heartened by that. And Wise Approach, to stumble like that, to clip heels, to basically peck and have all momentum halted, to then come round the houses via Cambridge and to finish that quickly, that powerfully, and win the race. Could he be something a little bit special? He seems to be, to me.
Yeah, you'd have to see for sure on what he did then. The concerns I have is that there was no Charles Darwin, no Albert Einstein there.
Who were maybe slowing up in front a little bit as well.
Yeah, you know, the real juvenile sprinting like standards, even Life Plan, the Gymcrack winner, wasn't there as well. So it felt like a sort of a slightly subpar running, and that gave me that feel, and he was allowed to stumble and do what he did. But you'd say incredibly impressive, and fair play for Charlie. He's aiming him as a sprinter. He knows he's a sprinter, so there's going to be no attempt to try and make him stay a mile and potentially bottom him out in his career in his three-year-old days. Goes to the Commonwealth Cup, which we know's been sort of under threat of Group 1 standing, but they're going to have a Group 1 winning juvenile going for it next year. So already something to look forward to that one. I just think there might be one or two better coming along than him.
And it was a fantastic weekend for Godolphin and Charlie Appleby, with Rebels Romance winning the big Grade 1 out in the US under an old friend in Frankie Dettori. James, Rebels Romance, we're running out of things to say about him.
I like how Chris put it. He is like a jump source. He comes back year after year. He's consistent. He's got a hell of a CV now. I mean, that was win number 20. I mean, he's won big races in all over the world. He's more travelled than we'd all dreamed to be. You know, he's done pretty much everything. It wasn't a great race in America, I have to say. And Charlie Appleby has done so well in building a constant stream of winners out there. And it was a very good trial for the Breeders' Cup turf, which no horse has ever won three times. He's going to have a big chance of doing it again because he just is so hard to knock. And what an incredible horse he's been for Godolphin. He's got to be one of their greats now, you'd have to say. And always nice seeing Frankie in those colours again.
Yeah, and I do remember Rebel's Romance winning at Royal Ascot and sort of getting Charlie Appleby out of trouble a little bit. They obviously started the season fantastically, Charlie Appleby. I think fair to say by their exceptionally high standards, there was a little bit of a lull in the summer. I think partly because Aidan O'Brien was winning everything in those races, those big group ones. Signs of just hitting top gear now heading into the autumn, Appleby and Godolphin. Obviously, they've got Ombudsman in a different stable, but a really productive new market and some good horses to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely so. But as well as that, Charlie, in the last couple of years, it's fair to say he's been targeting these lucrative races abroad. You think of the Breeders' Cup Mile with Master of the Seas and whatnot. Notable speech, obviously gone out and won his grade one in Canada again, got his head out in front, but he's probably going to be seen on different shores for the rest of the autumn. So maybe we can't just pinhole what Charlie achieves in Britain for the rest of the year, but more as a whole globally. He's now a bit of a global powerhouse, and he's going to be led by Rebel's Romance, who I've got to say, look, in a brilliant way, that the constitution of that horse is ridiculous. He's gone from Germany to the USA in less than under a month. He's been out to Hong Kong, Qatar, Dubai. It's just unbelievable that he seems to get on a plane and just absolutely thrives and has no impact on it whatsoever. And I was lucky enough to see him at York earlier this year. And Chris alluded to, obviously, he said a jumps horse, the popularity there. It really was. It felt like there was fans there for Rebel's Romance, which is really lovely to see when a horse builds up that sort of cult-like following. And it's lovely. Godolphin probably don't have that as much often as some other horses may do, because they're obviously a big Titan powerhouse. A lot of their horses sometimes retired to stud in the flat game, but because of the longevity of him, he's built up a really good following, and it's lovely to see him doing so well. And you have to say, he's the one to beat in the Breeders' Cup turf.
Yeah.
He is a horse who does it on all the big occasions, in all the big races. And as we touched on last week, they do not come any bigger than the Arc at Longchamp this weekend. I've got another excuse to hold up the newspaper. A great story from Lewis Porteous. Andrea Azzini, based out in Hong Kong, has been called up to ride Gia Velotto. I didn't see that one coming, Matt.
You wouldn't have done so. And then you realise, obviously, Andrea is Italian. Marco's Italian, the owners are Italian, they wanted to keep that...
Partnered the horse before, of course.
Absolutely, keep that Italian feel for it. But it's really, really good to see Andrea coming back here and riding in the Arc. And it probably shows you how, we might not know it, but how well he's doing out in Hong Kong at the moment. You know, he's still out there, which is always a success. And incredibly, the riding up over there, the standards are near enough impeccable, aren't they? And right at the very top, he's coming over here for a major European ride. So it's almost like he's one of the major global jockeys now, and that's really good for him, given his career was at a crossroads in Britain before he decided to leave. I know he had a Group 1 winner before he got on the plane, which must have felt a bit odd, but you know, it's brilliant. This is what you want to see, you know, for racing. It's really, really good to have him coming back over, even if it's a flying visit. He said get somewhere with a horse, and he feels like he's a horse that does take a little bit of knowing. Obviously Oisin's been riding him here while Andrea's been out in Hong Kong, but it looks like everything's falling in Giavolotti's favour to run a big race.
Yeah, it was a bit up in the air whether he would run. It was sort of him and Al McCam in particular in a strange... The British pitch is taking a bit more shape, James.
Yeah, the ground is the big question mark. I mean, we're so used to softish, potentially heavy, but we possibly might be on good ground for an Arc, which is pretty unheard of. And for Kalpana, who was, I suppose, all season long, the big British hope, who's taken the identical route, it seems, as Blue Stocking, has just continued to slowly improve throughout the season. And then, of course, the September Stakes, the race which Enable won before her Arc, she didn't win again, and suddenly you're going, maybe this horse just doesn't win races. So it's a question mark. As terms of the British Challenge goes, I'd say she's still the main one. Can we claim Gia Velotto? I suppose we can.
We've got a Strange as well.
Yeah, we have a Strange who is, again, real top class contender, but it's another one where you'd just think if there's a bit more cut in the ground, you'd really fancy. But I suppose if I was to say what country is it going to, I think it's going to go to Japan.
Yes, and Oisin Murphy not riding Gia Velotto because he's partnering Byzantine Dream. He won the pre-foy on Trials Day. I spoke to him after that race at Longchamp, and he mostly spoke about the other Japanese horses, saying this guy is very good, but Quadanor is the one. What do you think?
Well, he is a seriously good horse. So I've followed the Japanese racing, and he is the top of the three-year-olds by some way. Was very unlucky. Oh, not unlucky. He wasn't quite handled by conditions in the Guineas. Won the Derby head and shoulders clear of the best. He's a big, big horse, and I did wonder, he might be one next year that they'd travel over with, but they've got lucky this year with the ground, because traditionally Japanese horses prefer faster surface, although he does have European blood, so to speak. At the Dam, won the Park Hill at Doncaster.
There we go.
Many years ago. I think he's a seriously talented horse, and I think that the fact that Japan haven't won the Arc yet is very much part of his price. I think on class alone, I'd say he's equal with Mini Hawk, but I think he's a bigger price because there's still that uncertainty about the Japanese runners and the fact that they don't always win in Europe, so there's an uncertainty. But he'd definitely be the one for me.
There you go, clip that up. As good as Mini Hawk.
I think he's better than Mini Hawk, but of course...
clip that up.
But yeah, I do think he's better because obviously he gets the sex allowance.
Yeah.
On the sex allowance, I'd say, I'll almost sit on the fence and say they're equal, but hopefully Croydonard is not equal on Sunday.
And just for those listening at home, Japan's history in the Arc is absolutely fascinating. Slightly tragic, so many near misses.
Yeah.
They have a real passion for this race.
There is such a desire to win the race. Japanese racing is like... a bit like British flat racing was a few decades ago, where the centre is all about middle distance horses. It's that desire to breed top class middle distance horses. And in Japan, the Arc is seen as the absolute number one race to prove you are the champion. And I think there's a lot of national pride in Japan about going on and taking other horses in away soil. They came close to in the Kentucky Derby 2 years ago, I think, but the Arc is the absolute one. It's turf, it's a mile and a half, it's all the best from the world, and they want to be the best, and hopefully will on Sunday.
I do think if they win, the floodgates might open, because they've been, Japanese horses or trainers have been sending over oftentimes to Group 1s all over the world, not even their best horses, and they are still competitive, they're still winning these races, while their better horses are winning enormous prize money at home.
Yep.
I do wonder if they win an Arc, they go, let's just win everything.
Well, yeah, it'd be tick it off and then let's go, what's next? Right, Royal Ascot, right, Champion Stakes, right, King George and whatnot. They're being rewarded for having the patience to breed middle distance horses.
That's exactly right. I'm hoping people sort of look back and go, hey, look what fun you can have when you don't just breed sprinters. And they've bought a lot of horses. This is an example. Croydonard is an example of the sort of horse that's been sold abroad to breed as a middle distance horse and to win an Arc. That's a big wake up call for this idea. We've got to sprint speed. We've got to breed speed and sprinters and fast. And actually, see a mile six Group 2 winner be sent abroad and then produce an Arc winner would leave a lot of people scratching their head, because other than Coolmore, there is just rarely a constant stream of.
If you think Adyar and Hookham, I believe, are still standing over there. Mm. You know, the top class middle distance horses we had only a couple of years ago haven't been able to find a place in stud in Britain or Ireland, which it astounds me in a way. And I think sort of you see in terms of the British Challenge this year, when you say we can claim Giovalotta because he is technically trained in Newmarket, but the other ones being Estrange and Kalpana. I'm used to remember the days it was six or seven British horses and we were going there. Obviously, we've got the Irish horses going as well. But
yes, Aidan O'Brien, could he be the fly in the ointment?
Could do. I'm fascinated still by Mini Hawk, not in terms of do I think she'd win. I don't know. I haven't really had a massive look at the Arc yet. But I thought she was very, very good in the Yorkshire Oaks. I know it was not essentially a penalty kick, but she looks like she's getting better and better. And I'll disagree with some of our other colleagues who thought she's quite slow. I don't think she's that slow at all.
Really. She'll get her ground, she gets the allowances.
I think she wants a strongly run race. I think given she only just does enough every time, you don't know where her ceiling is yet. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the only thing is, I can't remember, Aidan's had a few runners in the Arcs recently, but he geared him more towards the Breeders' Cup turf and the Breeders' Cup, didn't he? City of Troy didn't contest the Arc, August Rodin didn't contest the Arc. So
she's quite like Found. Who won the Arc? She's tough. She's talented. She has the right profile for the race in many ways, and Croydonord doesn't, but I don't like Trent's to say.
So is he your idea of the winner at this early stage? I asked the guys last week.
I've fallen off the Kalpana train.
Okay.
Quite aggressively.
Well, with the ground, you know, you have more information now. Croydonord, Matt, massively on the spot.
Aventure.
Aventure.
Yeah, I thought she ran a stormer in the race last year, and I don't know if it's going to be, if there's not a blue stocking in there this year. I mean, the Japanese are very, very good, but they've still got that massive hurdle to overcome. I'd love to see Japan win it, to be honest, because it would do the sport wonders globally, and it's just, in general, it's my favourite race of the year on the flat is the Arc, and Arc Day itself and weekend is unbelievably good to go to. So just excited about it all.
That's good. Excitement. Hopefully that excitement carries on for you guys heading into the end of the week. Be sure to watch that race at Longchamp and be sure to tune in again for next week's edition of The Front Page. All that's left for me to say is a big thank you to Matt and James joining me in the studio. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you very much.
And wishing you all a very good week. Goodbye.